Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urisin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. Today's guest is Barbara Bannon. And Barbara is the Chief Creative Officer of Spark Genius. And she's a serial entrepreneur, and she really totally deserves the title serial, because that's what she does. And she recently built Spark Inc., which is a thank you card company. And she built that to a multi-million dollar level and then sold it within 2 years. And she's now building another brand, actually two other brands. And one of them is Spark Genius, which is an educational game that addresses the early STEM learning. In addition, she's launching Pure Goddess, which is in health and wellness space, targeting an underserved segment of women between the ages of 35 to 55 who do the most work and get the least attention. So with that, let's get started. So I usually ask, tell us something you're doing really well. And we don't really need to ask that to Barbara, because we can see what she does well, what she's really good at. So Barbara, tell us the secret about building brands successfully. And I mean, not just build it so that you can make sales, they're all connected anyway, but what makes a brand achieve high equity? How do you do it? And by the way, why did you get good at it? I mean, what led you to it? Because clearly, you know, we are born with some skills, but, you know, we kind of evolve. So everybody evolves in different ways. What caused this? Where did it come from?
Sure. Well, ever since I've been a little kid, I've been fascinated by why certain ideas take hold in society. Right? What are the human pain points, and what is human joy, and what causes them? Correct? So when you look at the ideas that have taken hold throughout history, you go, what's the anatomy of that idea? Right? And so that's really the backbone of what goes into beautiful brands, and the idea that brands that take hold and become billion-dollar brands, right? So I find when people approach Amazon, they approach it from a data perspective, which I definitely did for the first business. You have this wealth of data, this consumer demand data, which can suggest to you what people's pain points are. So you need to put on two different glasses when you look at this data. You have to say, okay, well, let's find this niche that has high search volume. And let's look at, not too many competitors are in that niche. However, there's another layer that you need to look at. You need to then back up and go, from a competitive standpoint, how many of them are nailing the branding problem that addresses a problem? Do they have strong statistics showing that problem, right? Are they showcasing, for instance, for Spark Genius, I'll display this for your listeners. So the problem that we have now is that many high school students and many college students are graduating without the skills necessary for the future workforce. They're not creative problem solvers. They lack emotional intelligence, and they still have a little bit of a fixed mindset, and they need a growth mindset. Well, research has shown that the best time to introduce early STEM learning, which STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and design, or in mathematics, is between the ages of pre-kindergarten, pre-K, preschool, and second grade, while kids are still not afraid to fail. They're curious, they're exploring, right? So the pain point that parents have is they want their children to be successful in the future. And they're just surrounded by all this junk and toys, and they don't know what to give them. Well, this addresses a specific problem, and it's research backed, right? So you have a model here. Identify a problem, a pain point in your customers, which can be found through data initially. Support it with statistics and sources. The World Economic Forum is stating that these are the skills that are necessary for the future workforce to be successful. State the solution and tie it into your product. How is your product solving this pain point for someone, right? So if you look around and you just have the data, this is almost eliminates the competition, right? Even if you have a brand that's doing fantastic, you know, you don't want to be the first market person into a market. You don't want to be the first one all the time. It's very expensive to break into a market with something brand new, but it's not very expensive to break into a market with this approach, identifying clearly a problem, using the statistics, creating the solution with your product, right? The A plus content is a perfect place for that, right?
So I wanna, you said so many actionable things. So let's dissect them a little bit. First of all, there is this question about marketing, and brand is the ultimate marketing because it's all about feelings, right? You are appealing to people's feelings and fears and pains and things like that. So that's a marketing. So is marketing an art or a science?
It's both.
Exactly. So that's what you're saying. So, but when you go into this Amazon world, now people just make it about science, which is all about numbers, right? So, so it cannot be. So what you are saying is, forget the data. Before you look at the data, first come up with whatever the problem is. Define the problem and define the solution based on how people.
You can do it either way. You can do it either way, right? So you can come up with, if you're having a particular problem personally, right? Because I'm an entrepreneur. I invent like 10 new products a day because I get annoyed with little things that aren't working smoothly around my house, right?
Yes.
You have to vet them with data at that point. But you can do it either way. If you're digging through data and you find three different niches, right? Three different product opportunities with your data, then you step back. And then you look at the landscape of competitors and say, is anyone solving this problem graphically and with a story and a strong brand story? Or is there an opportunity here for me to come in with strong visual photography, a strong problem statement, statistics, and a solution, right? So, that's clearly stated.
Which one do you find easier? Because I find, getting into, a lot of people identify with numbers, but some don't. And they just like to like words or pictures. So which one is easier, jump into data and then try to identify a problem, or identify a problem and then go look for the data? Which one do you prefer?
It depends on what your strength is. If you're more of an artist, come up with the problem first and create the solution. And then if you're more of a scientist, go into the data and back up. So you're always looking for, I don't like to use the word balance. I like the word harmony, right? You're always looking for the harmony of your skills whenever you're approaching a problem and you're creating solutions. Sometimes it's reverse engineered, sometimes it's top down.
Okay, so that's the first piece of information I picked up. Problem, solution, backed up by data, or depending on your personality, your strength, data, identify a problem, and then solution. The second thing that I heard you mention, which is interesting, and I also have my take on it, you don't want to be the first one because it's too expensive to present a solution on a problem.
Well, there's a difference. There's different strategies toward it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that first.
Well, my thought is this. Competition is good. If there is no competition in something, maybe there is no market for it. Right. So that's something that they say. In fact, when I was pitching business ideas I was told, and I would say like the first mover advantage. You have these phrases that you come up with and you throw them around. We're going to have the first mover advantage. And this was a very knowledgeable person, is a lawyer. He was the head of a venture capital fund. And he said, listen, don't be so crazy about being the first mover. What are you moving into? Maybe there's no market. Maybe you'll be the only one.
So, the ocean of sharks.
Yeah, there is a reason why there's nobody else. However, you also don't want to jump into something so saturated. Right. either. So what is the balance? What are you looking for?
When I have the data, so I'm looking at my spreadsheet, I do a filter for under 5,000 competitors, okay? And I look for search volume of over 100,000 per month, okay, in the top 10 keywords. All right? And so that's my little rubric that I use. But then what you want to do is you want to go back and use a Helium 10 or a Jungle Scout on your Chrome or whatever browser you use to look at the results, the search term results of the first page of whatever those keywords turn out to be. And if the competitors all have 8,000, 10,000 reviews, and there's something called market depth, right? So you go through, and if the first 10 listings are all above 10,000 reviews, you go, ooh, that's a little bit too much competition, right? But if your spreadsheets are doing their job and you're finding competitive keywords, as I call these micro markets, each keyword is its own little micro market that has demand and competition. So that's how I navigate this. If the competition is low, say you find a keyword that has 850 competitors and there's 13,000 or 20,000 search volume a month, and you bring it up and there's only top two or three competitors have maybe, I don't know, 2,000, 4,000, you know, reviews, or even up to 10,000, the market depth, you still have plenty of playable room down there. So below like the fifth or sixth, you have people that have 200, 500, 1,000 reviews, right, sitting under there. So you have room to play in that less competitive space through those more demand, less competitive keywords in that micro market. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. There is also, I had another guest. His name was Barry Tates. I don't know if you heard his episode, but he also said that you don't want to be on the top listing because that puts you under microscope. You want to be like somewhere in the middle of the page because you get less exposure, you get less people trying to hack your product, and still you make pretty sizable business that way. Yeah. Would you agree?
I completely agree, because the first business, Spark Inc., we were the moonshot company. We basically went from being a nobody to beating Hallmark in the thank you card business. In fact, Hallmark is now mimicking our designs on Amazon. So mimicry is the greatest sign of flattery, I guess.
Yeah.
But it also is like, geez, now all Hallmark's trying to do it because we're the best, right? And then the Chinese competitors came off and they copied our designs and they, you know, tried to compete with us. And granted, they still haven't been able to do it because we were so strong with our content and we knew what we were doing. So when we sold, Boosted Commerce was the company that purchased us, and they're wonderful. If anyone's listening and they want to exit their business, I highly recommend Boosted Commerce. They're a great team over there. And they came out and they purchased the business and have it been able to maintain top positioning and branding for Spark Inc. on Amazon right now. So you definitely do get targeted for being hacked. This company that we're doing, we're literally working on. We have a consultant that grew a nine-figure Amazon business, and he had 4,000 ASINs and managed his entire business using a spreadsheet. And okay. So when I talked to him, my geek and nerd like light started going off. I'm like, this is awesome. I love data and spreadsheets. Teach me, teach me. So we're taking a little bit of a different approach, maybe not 4,000 ASINs, but we're looking to stick in the, you know, top 20 or top 10 listings. And organically, the current product, Preschool Genius, is already ranked for over, at one point it was 144 keyword terms organically in the top 10. Right now we're at 55 because it's not as seasonal. We're in a lower sales season.
Yeah. Okay. So the third thing I picked up from your description of why what makes you good at it is you mentioned A plus content.
Yes.
So first, again, for new sellers or wannabe sellers, what is A plus content? How do you get it? And what are the benefits of it?
Sure. So go to USPTO and get your trademark. today. It's like $450. It's worth every penny. And you don't even, in order to be in brand registry, that unlocks, being in brand registry unlocks A plus content. It unlocks branded advertising, your videos that you see in all the advertising search engine results are from being in brand registry. There is a wide variety of benefits that I haven't even explored all of them, to be honest, in brand registry that you get. But you get a lot of brand protection as well. So say if you're wholesaling, this allows you, if you're in brand registry, you can actually lock out wholesale sellers from selling your product on Amazon to become your competition, which is another reason why you want to do it. So needless to say, go to USPTO, get your trademark. You don't have to wait 6 to 8 months in order to get the final trademark to be in brand registry. They will provide you your number, your registration number, and that is all you need with a product, a picture of the actual product using the brand logo, and you'll get accepted into brand registry. It'll unlock branded content, which is the ability to have the full graphic listing underneath your normal listing images and in bullet points and title. So that is essential real estate for your listing to be able to define your unique positioning in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. So this brand registry, so again, for those who are just planning to do this, when you sign up for a seller account, you don't necessarily get this automatically. In addition, in order to get your brand, let's say, for example, you have an idea, you come up with a brand name. In order to make that brand your brand in an official way, you need to have trademark. And that goes to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Also, Amazon has a program called IP Accelerator. You can go through that. Either way, there's some red tape that you have to deal with. But once you have that registration number, then you can create a brand registry account, which is different than your Seller Central account. You need to link the two together. And there is a bit of a trick there, because if you don't link them, then they think that this is the brand owner and this seller is somebody else. So that is the trick. And you need to link them together. And then after you link them together, you add your brand to the brand registry account, which automatically becomes part of your Seller Central. And at that point, A plus content becomes available to you, where you can upload videos, and you can create pages. I'm sure when you go to Amazon, you would have seen those. You scroll down where it says product details, somewhere around the middle of the page, you've got this, you know, elaborate pictures and, you know, comparison charts and things like that people put up. And that's where you are branding. Obviously that differentiates you from other listings, right? So, but as far as the actual use of the keywords and things like that, do you put them also in your A plus pages? Does Amazon use them, or how do you get the most out of those?
Well, you want to, they don't, the algorithm doesn't search the graphics in A plus content. There's actually some controversy around that, because some people have told me that the algorithm in Amazon actually will take like photos and then do, you know, text recognition of the photos of the little snapshots of your listing. I don't have enough data to believe that. So where you want to put your keywords and make sure it doesn't look keyword stuffed is in the product description, which is actually what comes up above your A plus content on mobile. So that's where you want to very cleanly describe the benefits of your product and the problems that it solves.
Yeah. The one thing also I learned a while ago, which was very surprising, but when you have all these keywords built into your content in your listing, Amazon does not index the text in your A plus content pages.
Right.
But you know who indexes it? Google. So that's the real, I mean, A plus content, bottom line, this is what I tell all my clients. A plus content, you must have. It does two things. It helps your conversion rate and it drives external traffic from Google searches, because Google will index those pages.
So I did not know that.
Yeah, that's the reality of it. Because they already have the title and the bullets and even description, they don't index anymore.
Well, they have image search now too. So yeah, I wonder if it comes up in there. I'll have to check that out. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, well, I mean, this is like, you know, you've written the playbook for people. I mean, I love your description of, you know, how do you pick the right size of competition to jump in, and then you're giving me these numbers, you know, so many searches. I don't think that anybody could get as specific. So that's great. So let's talk a little bit, you know, like bigger picture. So obviously you built a brand on Amazon, and then now you're building another one, but it's on Amazon. So what do you see as the biggest opportunity? Why are you doing it on Amazon, and what kind of an opportunity do you see? And what are the challenges to realize that opportunity?
True. Okay. Well, the last brand was a multi-million dollar brand, right, that we grew in 2 years. And literally, we didn't do anything. Like, we did PPC. We didn't have to do any content marketing. We didn't have to do anything because it was such a specific niche. And how we did it was we went in and we looked at the current competition, and we analyzed all the customer reviews, and the customers were looking for more assortment and they liked bulk. So we took the top selling thank you card and said, okay, let's do some variations of design and do 4 different thank you cards and put it in a box of 100. So it satisfied 2 demands that the market was not, you know, it was not being met at the time. So that was how we stood out against the competition there. And we rose to the top within 2 years, you know, and we did a couple of other designs, but they weren't as popular as the first. And the first one we did like 15 variations of, and that's where we made 90% of all of our income, right? So that was the moonshot business. This one is exciting because this is a real market gap. Like the STEM early education, only the real nerdy parents know about, and the rest of the world isn't really, you know, tuned in to this huge demand and this gap, right? So now we have the chance to do some real content marketing around this and to get some mom and teacher influencers involved and to have them really talking about and educating the world about this need, right? That literally the economic competitiveness of the US depends on this in the next 20 years,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. And we're actually building an influencer marketing strategy right now where we're identifying key influencers and building up a big affiliate program. And we're also looking at wholesaling this in addition to Amazon. So we're looking at getting into the big box sellers, into some of the more lower tier sellers. And we have someone representing us for that through educational distributors. So if there's a lot, this one's going to be, we're aiming for it to be a $1 billion business.
So, but you're starting on Amazon though. It's usually people go the other way around. They try to go get the, you know, supply chain set up, you know, do wholesale deals and get it on the shelf. And then they say, oh, you know, you're going the other way around. Why is that?
Data. Instantaneous market feedback. Yeah. Like if you go to a wholesaler and you say, hey, we've got a 5-star brand or a 4.8 star brand on Amazon, it proves that the product's going to sell for them too, instantaneously. So you've got your market proof, right?
Well, I mean, this is... You know, you say these things in a very subtle way, and I have to break them down because they're so valuable. First of all, go back to the first one, Spark Inc. You said you searched it, and then you created variations, and then you put them into 100 card packs. Now, you know this. First of all, you built a whole different revenue model by creating those packs. Right? Up the average order value. People don't think about it. They think, oh, I'm going to be real cheap. I'm going to be very competitive.
Never.
Cheap is not the answer. It doesn't make you money, right? So you have a revenue model that you built that is healthy with high average order value. The second thing you did is you created variations, which means you have one parent, that's all you advertise, but you got 4 different products.
Colors.
People can. Yeah, exactly. So this is so important. The other thing that I heard you mention in this, you use Amazon for test marketing. It's almost like proof of concept before you go out and do things, because you can't argue data, argue against data. You don't have to say anything by showing the number of reviews. So everybody knows only a small percentage of orders become reviewed. So they can do the math.
Well, another thing too that no one really does on Amazon is go for awards. Apply for awards for your product. We already won 3 toy awards, and we've only been launched since September.
Yeah.
So we've got big players, in the toy market recognizing that our toys are high quality and they're solving a major problem, right? And that's like more social proof for your consumers and for your wholesalers and for everybody when they go on and they see that this is an award-winning product. And you have to apply for it. They're not going to come find you.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is so key. So the real opportunity that I'm hearing from you is you actually establish your product, you test market while making money, and then you leverage that standing to build a supply chain around it if you want to go that route.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's
so basically, like, have you ever heard of the Lean Startup, Eric Ries?
Yes, yes, yes.
Everything is MVP, minimum viable product. And then you iterate. Exactly. And you can do this because you're not over your head with the $100,000 investment.
Exactly. And people understand that. So a long time ago, I attended one of the workshops by Guy Kawasaki. Mm-hmm. So you know how he is. He's like one of the entertainers. I mean, the guy is a showman. He's an entrepreneur, of course, but he's a showman. So he would say, guys, don't wait for the perfect product. Just roll out version 1.0. He says, you know what we call version 1.0? It's the version you never have to apologize for.
I like that.
So you advertise it to everybody and then just roll it out. But the key to success is churn. So you have to keep releasing new versions of it, fixing it, making it better and better and better. So that's the idea. And in the process, you're generating revenue. So
what MVP looks like for different categories makes a difference. I mean, you don't want to come out with something so subpar to your competitors that you're going to get horrible reviews right out of the gate, right? Yeah. But, use the thinner paper. Or, use the cheaper material that's a little bit cheaper, in the beginning, just to get it out to see what people care about, right? And then you're going to get the reviews that are 5-star. They're like, we love this product. We wish that, this was a little different. But they're not going to nail you. You don't want to make it so cheap that the product is going to fall apart, or that someone's going to get hurt, or it's not going to pass testing or whatever. You want to make it consumable enough where the people are enjoying it, but there's a little bit of room for improvement. Yes. So where you can kind of make those decisions where to cut corners, like instead of having a super huge storage box for it, right? Just use a cardboard box with no graphics. Like our thank you cards didn't have any fancy packaging. And we positioned it that way, that we were eco-friendly, right? It was in a cardboard box. That's it. And then they had the 100 cards inside of it with a little insert that said, we're a small family business. We're not buying a CEO that's buying a third vacation home. You're supporting a mom and pop shop. And we got a ton of reviews and people loved that they were supporting a small family.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have that appearance of, we are this, we are that. Actually, that's to some people, it's a turnoff, especially in this world where some corporations really do things badly and then they become the enemy. That I don't like that either, but anyway, that's so
there's a mistrust for corporations right now, which is unfortunate, but
yeah, it is. So now, since you keep mentioning data, so I want to see what your take is on data that is really valuable data for listings, to see how your listings are performing, because Amazon does not make that data available. You can't get it through the API. You need to download it and then work it, right? So it's everyday work, and you have to build these elaborate sheets, and then suddenly there's a change. Now you have to go back to it again. So what is your take on it? First of all, do you use it? What do you use, and how do you make sense of this laborious work?
Sure. I definitely use it, and I look at it about every 2 weeks. Okay. And you can do this either through generating the search term reports through Amazon. I use Celex, which is a tool that I really enjoy because I get to meet with a consultant every month and go through it because I have two little kids. I'm kind of busy now. Before, when I was growing this other business, I only had one, and two just doubles it. But the big thing is you've got to look at conversion rates, right? That's like the little column that everybody's like, oh, okay, I'm going to look primarily over here on how many sales that I'm generating and what the impressions are. And then people don't typically look at their CR, which is the conversion rate column. That's where the gold is, right? Even though you may have, I don't know, maybe it's you're getting 600 traffic a month on this, but you've got a 40% conversion rate. What is that telling you psychologically? That keyword is matched up perfectly or almost perfectly for what you're selling, right? So what you want to do with those high converting search terms. So say what I like about Celex or any software that you're using is it should give you a benchmark. So what is the average conversion rate for your category, right? So then you take whatever that average conversion rate is, and then you add a couple of percentage points to it. And that gives you your bottom line for the keywords you want to explore further. So for me, I like a 10% conversion rate. So if a keyword's getting a 10% conversion rate at the minimum and has sold over 3 orders, then that goes into a broad campaign, right? So what is broad phrase and exact? Well, broad is my detective, right? Broad is the detective agency that allows us to expand upon any search terms that include those keywords. So those are the guys that are out there checking out what are some other similar keywords that are also going to convert, that's going to give me a better model of who my target audience is. The ones that start converting over 3 get moved into the exact column. Okay. So I think a lot of listeners, I had a problem. So here's a challenge. You mind if I bring up this?
Sure.
Okay, this is something that I learned from the first business, the second business. We had a CPC cost that was extremely high, and it was masking really good keywords, okay? So we had a keyword that had a really good conversion rate, but it was in the red. It was unprofitable, and it was simply because our CPC was high. Once we got the CPC down to the closer average CPC for the category, that was one of our best performing keywords. And I thought it was unprofitable simply because we were paying too much per click. And it may be obvious to other people, but when you're looking at thousands of keywords, you just go, oh, that's in the red. Let's pause that one, or let's keep dropping it. But you don't know how far to drop it unless you're benchmarked. Like, you got to know what that average CPC is for your category. Otherwise, you don't know if you're overpaying.
What about the conversion rate on the listing itself? Do you monitor that?
Yes. And the listing itself, again, I go back to benchmarks. So when we first, I'll give an example for this particular listing that we have. We had a double click-through rate than the average of our category. So more people were clicking on ours twice as much as every other listing in our category. So I'm like, this is great. But our conversions were half that of everyone else, right? What does that tell you?
Your content and your reviews, substandard.
So the reviews were great. So it had to be
content.
The content, right? So immediately what I did was I went in and I looked at our content and I said, okay, that's when I said to myself, we need to be more clear on what our purpose is. This is where I said, we got to beef up our brand story, because I had it in my head when I was developing the product. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Developing the product, but I wasn't communicating it visually. So back to the drawing board, problem, statistic, solution, and then tying that solution into the product, right? Going out, applying for those awards, showing that other people who are authorities in that industry say that this is quality. The other thing you can also do is when you're using influencers, find an influencer, do a product exchange. And the trick is, don't go after the Kim Kardashians, right? Go after the micro influencers that have 5,000 to 50,000 followers who haven't tasted the monetization success yet. So they'll be willing to go and do a video for you, showcasing and reviewing your product, right? Just in exchange for giving them a product for free.
I mean, those are, it's always a good idea to go with that lower tier, because they will be a lot more authentic. They won't be doing it for money. Now, there is something I want to point out. You mentioned, when we were talking about conversion rates, two things: keywords, and then picking the exact broad, but that really is campaign management conversion. And you are going at keyword level. But that conversion did not really tell you the story about the fact that you are not clearly communicating. You had to look at the listing conversion, which is what uncovers these things. So, so at the very least, you need to understand the difference and then manage it accordingly. But you have to stay on top of it. And the ugly truth is that listing conversion is not available unless you like going through the downloads every day and then looking at it, monitoring it, right? That's
you can find software that does it. So software will help you with that. But if you want to do it through Amazon, I have not found an easy way of doing it using just the Amazon data. Yeah. It's worth investing in a software that'll provide you that conversion data at a listing level. And then from there, once you correct your conversion issue and it is at least at the same level as your benchmark for the entire category, then you can start driving traffic. Because if you're not having, you can drive all the traffic in the world, but if your conversion rate is low, you're just, you get a take and you got to plug the hole.
Yeah, you just said it exactly. I tell people, you know, when I work with them, say, oh, you know, we're thinking, you know, we're going to put the listings up and then we're going to start running paid ads. And I say, no. First, you need to optimize the listing. You need to build it in a way that's optimized. And you don't even know it's optimized until you start seeing some activity and you look at the conversion. Once you get the conversion right, now you're ready to spend money. Otherwise, you're just throwing money away. You don't, it's like carrying a bucket with holes in it, putting water in it. You're not going to end up with anything. Yeah, I mean, this is key. Great. So let's talk a little bit about what it takes to be successful as a team. What are the roles that you need to identify and you need to people in place? Because you can't do it all by yourself. There are totally different skill sets needed, and you need to be really meeting the Amazon standards, otherwise you get thrown out. So what is a good team makeup? And knowing what you know after doing all this, what do you recommend for startups at the beginning and for growth mode? What is a good idea to outsource? What is a good idea to keep in-house? So give us the formula.
Sure, okay. So I'm gonna start with the startups, and then I'll get into sort of the medium size. And then the enterprise level, I'm gonna leave off the table because they have the resources to kind of figure this out, okay? So the small startups, again, you need to really know thyself, okay? You have to understand what your skill sets currently are, where the gaps are, what you need to learn, and what are your resources, really, okay? The financial resources. So what I would do is I would focus again on learning Amazon. I would not outsource your product manufacturing overseas initially for the testing, because you have more control over product development and prototyping if you manufacture it locally. And it also kind of avoids the supply chain issue initially, even though the costs are a bit higher. It reduces and lowers that learning curve. So that's an easy way to kind of make this an easier kind of pill to swallow to go in and learn Amazon. PPC is not as difficult as it looks. So I would invest in educating yourself about PPC, because a lot of people, that isn't a core competency that you're going to need if you're going to grow from small to medium to enterprise. It's something that you will outsource, but you need to understand how it works so that when you do hire someone, they're not fleecing you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So know your finances, know what your cost of goods are, know what your gross profit margin is, your net profit margin. Know how it impacts the bottom line when you start spending a whole lot of money on your advertising, right?
By the way, I have a question. A lot of people don't know this. And you'll be surprised how many people start businesses they don't even know. define gross margin, define net margin.
Sure, no problem. So I'm going to also just quickly say this because it may be of interest to people who are positioning their company for sale. All right. I like people who are very concrete and say things that are useful. So a gross margin is basically your top line net revenue. So it's basically the number of sales you make times the retail price. Okay. And then you basically subtract your landed cost. So what is that? Cost of goods. So it's the cost of your product and then what it costs to ship it to Amazon. Okay, so that's what your gross profit margin is your top line revenue minus your landed cost. And that number is your gross profit margin. If someone's trying to buy your company, this number should be between 60 and 70%. Okay. And the reason for that is, well, I'll get into that in a little bit if anyone's interested, and I'll let you determine if you think this is interesting. Yeah. So then your net profit is your gross profit, and you continue to subtract all of your operational cost, okay? So that's salaries, that's advertising cost, that's Amazon fees, that's storage fees, that's any other possible cost that you have. That is then your net profit, okay? And the net profit, and also like your loan payments and everything too comes out of that. So if you're stretching out your expenses into loans, which you do have to do initially to increase your cash flow, you need some sort of debt equity, okay, or debt financing, I mean. So all of this is in a ginormous spreadsheet, and it's important for you to build it from scratch, in my opinion, so you understand how all of these things work together. It's very simple once you do it, but it makes a difference. So cost of goods, initially, when you start, you should be looking at a cost of goods between 30 and 40% when you're starting up a product and you're prototyping it. Your MVP is 30 to 40% of your retail price. So then you know when you're sourcing out and you're doing your request for proposals to many different manufacturers, you know what the price point has to be. And of course, that goes down as you order more and more and more and more of them. As you become more successful, it's called when you scale up, your costs go down. So eventually your cost of goods should be between 15 and 25% if you're manufacturing in the US, okay? So those are the three key metrics that you need to financially pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly it. A lot of people kind of tune out when it comes to numbers. They say, oh, I don't like accounting. But this is it. I mean, you want to make money, you have to know how to count your money, right? So, and I always say this, gross margin is what it costs you to buy the product, land it, and subtract it from your sales. That's what it is, as a percentage. So yep. Now I say, So I usually have three buckets. Bucket one is the cost of goods. Bucket two is selling expenses. Selling expenses include Amazon commission, advertising, fulfillment, and other bits and pieces. So those are selling expenses. The difference between selling expenses and cost of goods sold is if you make no sale, you have zero selling expenses, zero cash flow going out. But if you make no sale, you still have inventory. So you'll invest it. And then the third bucket is your overheads. Those overheads, they are fixed and you need to know what that is. So I say this. So if you think about this as a business owner, if you know $30 out of every $100 you bring in goes to buying the merchandise and $25 goes to selling it, now you are at 55. And then you know $10, it gets allocated to your overheads. Every day, you just look at your top line, how much did we sell today? You know how much money has just gone into your pocket.
Once you're efficient,
of course. You work towards it. So you have goals. So that's why these margins become key to know. And a lot of people don't know it because, first of all, they don't know the definition. Second, they don't have their accounting set up the right way to track these things. They don't have inventory management, where they you know, if they want to know how much the cost of goods sold was for a period, say, oh, we just go count how much we have left, and then we subtract. You can't run a business like that, right?
So the number in your bank account does not mean you're successful.
Exactly.
You can't just check your bank account and go, oh, we have money.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, well, I mean, this is so good. So we're kind of running out of time. So I want to wrap up with one of your favorite questions when we had our discussion before. So give us your take. So if you could wish one thing for Amazon to change in their policies for sellers, what would that be? What could they be doing better?
So I think that Amazon should not necessarily get prime placement on search results for their own brands. That's a big one. I think they're competing with their FBA sellers, and I think it's kind of not a good policy that they do that. That's one. The other is they just had this new ratings program that came in, and this was a new one for me because I didn't have this with my thank you card business before, where people can go in and they can leave ratings, but they're not required to leave a customer review. I don't think I learned very much from that as a seller. I would like to see feedback. I want to see what people actually gave me a 3-star review for or a 5-star review for, because it really hurts product development. I can't improve my product if I don't know why you're doing something. So I think they should remove that and kind of make people even write a sentence about why they left a poor review. And then there's one more thing. I could go on forever, but I'll just keep it short. One more thing and then I'll stop. And that is, you can actually, people can leave reviews that are false, and they can be unverified purchases. So it could be a competitor that goes in and does that, or it could be just a grumpy person that just likes to leave negative reviews. And for instance, we got one that said our product was not returnable, and our product was fully returnable because we're FBA sellers. So they posted it on there. It's an unverified purchase, and it must be a competitor because it's completely not true about an FBA seller is that it's not returnable. So like, and I've been having a heck of a time trying to get it removed from the Amazon customer support, even though it's making their FBA program look bad.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big problem. I mean, Amazon works hard at making these reviews as authentic as possible. So I've seen situations where, first of all, let's mention this here. Do not ever ask family, friends. Do not ever make a purchase yourself with the intention to play. It's going to get you in trouble. It's not worth it. Don't do it. The other thing that I've seen it happen is if somebody goes, leaves reviews, and they find that this is not a legit situation, they remove all those reviews by that reviewer, and they ban that user from leaving a review again ever in the future on any product. So hunting for reviews is really not a good practice. Amazon is trying to be on top of things. As far as rating and review, you're right, that's recent. And you never know why Amazon does things. You just have to be able to read between the lines. The way I read it is two reasons. One is people don't like to write stuff, but they don't mind clicking around. So of course, rating something is just clicking a few things. So I think they wanted to make it easy. But the other reason is I believe that Amazon is now opening these physical stores that they call 4-star stores, and they pick 4-star, any product that has achieved 4-star or up, they actually, if it's their own, they put it in these physical stores. Otherwise, they also purchase it from the seller to put in the stores, or they simply use your FBA, because I'm sure you've seen sometimes you have your listing, you are the only one selling it, but suddenly you see another seller and that other seller is Amazon. So those are the returns, you know, they pick, you know, the returns come back, they don't add it to your stock, they add it to their stock, and then they sell it as slightly used or whatever. So, but you know, those ratings help them identify which products are a good fit for their physical stores. So, but it's a challenge. Anyway, so Barbara, this has been, I have to say, this was like a concentrated Amazon Academy for Success. So tell us, how long you've been doing this?
Since 2017. That's it.
So it's not really that long. So tell us who Barbara Bannon is. You mentioned you had two kids, but where do you live? What are your passions? What do you like to do in your free time? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I live in Upper State New York in the Albany area. And I have two children and we just got a puppy, which I can't even explain. We must be crazy because we have two young children and a puppy. Where is she? Hold on. I'll pick her up. Here she is. It's a Bernedoodle. Oh,
what is that? Is that a Maltipoo?
It's a Bernedoodle. It's half Bernese Mountain Dog.
Ah, okay.
But she looks kind of like an Arctic fox and I just woke her up. But anyway, so we're crazy because now we have a puppy and a two-year-old and all in the same house and a six-year-old. But I'm passionate about entrepreneurship, creating things that help people, philosophy, educational philosophy, you name it. I love life. I love the flexibility of being an entrepreneur and working from home with my husband and my family.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't thank you enough. I'm sure that people will appreciate everything you said. It's so accurate. And thank you again. So we'll, give us your contact information. We'll obviously put it on the website, how people can reach you.
Sure. People can reach me at bbannon@spark-genius.com. And we are looking for brand ambassadors for Spark Genius. So if you're a teacher or a mom that's passionate about early STEM education, reach out to me and maybe we'd be a good fit for our affiliate program.
Great, great. Thank you. Thanks, Barbara, again. So that's it, everyone. Another episode comes to an end. And I hope you'll take everything Barbara said and put it to good use and make a lot of money and sell your company one day, like Barbara did. Thanks again, and see you again at the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.